have to deal with the flood and the ramifications of that. But then a tornado hits New Orleans earlier this year and took out whatever building that they had done in one particular area. And so much where Californians, for the first time in decades, can be envious of people that live in other states. You know, people are now beginning to think earthquakes are, you know, a good thing. So they're thinking about coming here. But we live in very tumultuous times. And in our own personal life, I almost never like to teach from my own personal life what I've been experiencing. But it just hit me a couple of days ago that I am really overwhelmed. I think Russ can attest to this. Russ was in the hospital with his son Brian yesterday, who was suffering with cluster headaches. And just while I was in the emergency ward, I ran into two others besides Russ that needed prayer that I knew. You know, one was a guy named Rick Snyder who had come in with blood clot in his leg, and another one was this dear saint of God named Mary Chinowski, who most of you wouldn't know, but believe it or not, she's a full lifer. She came to her daughter Tony would bring her to church, and she was wheelchair bound, and she's 93, and she was in the hospital, and that kind of stuff happens all the time, you know. And by the way, yeah, I do hospital visits, except for Sylvia, who doesn't want me to visit her in the hospital, because I'm not really good in emergency situations. But you know, there's a lot of stuff that's happening in people's lives that are just can be a tad bit overwhelming, and it'd be surprising how fast your life can change, you know. One minute you think you're riding on top of the world, and then the next minute things just come crashing down. We're already dealing with some family stuff where you know, our family dynamic is changing. We're taking care of two grandkids from Sandy is, well, in all good pastor relationships, you pick up strays along the way, you know. People that you help or you try to, you just kind of pick them up just the way it is. And Sandy was, Marta Corena family, her mom died when I think Sandy was 6 or 7. And her dad is Basque, and his first language is just that. It's Spanish, and he doesn't speak hardly any English at all. He's been in America for 20 years, and he really has very, very, very bad, broken English. He runs a pool company, and he survives in that genre, but he just cannot communicate, you know, on any real level. And so, you know, they just spent a lot of time with us and ultimately kind of got integrated into our family, and that's kind of what happens and becomes like a child, and you end up, you know, being very close to them. And so, you know, I had married them and led West to the Lord when he was in high school, and as Sandy's husband, and so, you know, we're close. And so now we have two grandkids living with us. It just kind of happened just like that. And that would have been good, but we have a lot of other people living in our house too at this time. And one of them is my wayward nephew it's funny because somebody well-meaning was critical of this, and I just want to call attention to it, that, you know, sometimes unbelievers come through full life doors a lot, and we have to be open to that. But, you know, obviously he smells like cigarettes and alcohol when he comes to church sometimes. My nephew lives with us, and he's kind of in a wayward state. And, you know, Lord has brought him into our life for that as well. And you know, you just, again, you pick up strays and you try to be faithful to what God has given to you. But on Thursday night, one of my friends is the sheriff of Ventura County, and because my nephew got kind of detained at the Holiday Inn Express, where he decided to rent a room to party, and had some alcohol and, you know, drugs in the room with minors, and they were calling to see, you know, if I wanted to come to the party. And Sheriff Torres said, "Is this Pastor John McKendricks? We have your nephew here in custody at, you know, Holiday Inn, and we'd like to know if you want to come down and, you know, can you talk to him and, you know, make sure he knows what's going on." And I'm thinking, you know, do I really need this, like, right now, you know? So Sue's already dislocated and up in Northern California, and we're making a life change. And I say all that because you can probably tell the wind blew my hair in some abnormal fashion where I look even more bald than I normally do. And really this morning I just don't care, you know. I mean, that's such a disheveled point that I feel wind blown, and I thought it fit with the message, so I thought I'd put it out there. And we face a lot of tumultuous things in our life, things that are just coming at us at such a rapid pace that, you know, we can't seem to handle everything. things that seem to be out of our control, you know, like Russ's son with cluster headaches. It sounded to me like one of the problems with the cluster headaches is you really don't know what it is. I mean, you can't put your finger on, you know, no CAT scan, no medical diagnosis is going to put their finger on what causes those to happen, you know. Steve and Debbie, you guys have been for a long time waiting for breakthrough and needing something to happen and faithfully serving, but it's in the infamous words of W.C. Fields, you know, never give a sucker an even break, you know, because there's always just something that just keeps coming at you, and it gets hard, and we sometimes don't really understand everything that people are going through. I know Steve was telling me last night that, you know, he's now facing a situation where it's not a horrible situation, but it's one more thing you got to do on a list that you don't want to do of stuff that's coming at you that you really just don't want to, you want to handle. You just want things to go smoothly, and things don't. And so it kind of came to me that we live in these just really tumultuous times and where we feel so out of control about everything that's going on. Am I speaking just to myself, or can people identify besides that, that you can feel like, man, what is going on? So I think the thing that really stands out to me about the situation that we're facing is that, you know, we live in a world that thinks that good things come to good people and bad things happen to bad people. So that if you're going through a hard time, you've heard my phrase that don't complain too loud about what you're going through because half the people think you deserve it and the other half don't care, you know. But that's not really the way it works. Sometimes bad things happen to good people, people who read their Bible, people who pray, people who tithe, people who go to church. And, you know, these things happen and your life dynamic changes and, you know, it just doesn't happen the way you think it's going to happen. And it can be a very scary thing when all that stuff comes at you in one way or another. And so what I was going to talk about actually comes in two phrases. I was going to talk about, I've been talking about the names of God, or at least God is talking about his attributes. And Steve and Michael had spoken about Jehovah Rapha, God our healer. And I felt like talking about God who is in control. The sovereign, providential care of God is over us. Nobody wants their life interrupted. Nobody. Poor Ricky Bobby was not handling his crisis all that well. Felt like he was on fire. And it reminded me of Dave King, which is why I mentioned it, because Dave King used to have this phrase. He'd always say, you're running around, yeah, this was his symbol. And that meant that you were running around Mach 5 with your hair on fire, you know. And that's kind of what's going on in that situation. There's this tendency of panicking. One thing that our family's going through is a panicking disorder where real things just are so amplified that you're paralyzed at even the proposition of just something simple. So I just call attention. Has anyone ever been paralyzed by like a past due light bill or drop the milk out of the refrigerator? I mean, haven't you ever had one of those things where it's just one stupid thing, but it's the last thing you needed at that day? Like, you ever had your doorknob break at the time you didn't need it? Have you ever all the weeks, like your car tire like runs forever, and it's that day that you get a flat tire, you know, something like that, where it's not just even a trial. It's a discouragement that sometimes can creep into the human heart. It's something that can sometimes interject itself. It complicates it to a point where it takes the things that you can manage and all of a sudden it becomes unmanageable because of that one thing. Like, I think I told you about the day, well, I have several funny stories about me and my cars, but and all of them are true. Like the day I was hanging on an overpass being attacked by a homeless guy's dog on a hot summer day. That wasn't fun. But one of my favorite stories is the day that I felt like I was having a flat tire, and I was pulling the car over to deal with the flat tire when I ran out of gas. And then I had to coast, and it makes more sense if you know where I was at. I was leaving the Tapo Canyon off-ramp. No, I was leaving the Stearns off-ramp. And all I had to do was make it down the off-ramp, and I was going to coast across into where the Salvation Army place is. And I was doing a good, you know, 25 going down this hill, blah, 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 bump. And I'm thinking, the light's turning, you know, now yellow, ready to change red, and there's no way I'm stopping. So I just coast across the thing and down into the thing. Of course, I'm going faster than I thought I was, and now I'm airborne into the parking lot. I get the attention of this police officer. Now the light's red, you know, so obviously I must have run the red light, so now he's going to pull me over, and I'm like, I ain't stopping for you, I ain't stopping for nobody. So what seems to be a very simple event turns out to be this huge ordeal, okay? So he is now going to gun me down if I don't pull this car over, and there ain't no way I'm going to pull this car over until I get into that gas station, which is like 30 feet away, you know? So now the car's run into a stop, and he's on his bullhorn, pull the vehicle over. And I'm jumping out of the car to push it because I'm not going to lose the momentum, you know? And he's like, I order you in the name of the law, freeze. You know, my grandma getting gunned down. So I'm frazzled, and I'm sitting in there, and he's like, you purposely denied my order. And I'm like, I didn't do anything, man. I'm trying to get to the gas station. And I explain him what's going on, and he's now understands the thing, and he gives me a warning. He says, I'm going to give you a warning this time. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's lucky because I was about ready to give you a butt whooping. No, but anyways, yeah. I was frustrated, you know. And so he leaves, and I'm not paying attention, and you know, he helps me change the tire, and, you know, I'm now getting ready to put gas in my car, and I pump gas in my car, and he's trying to talk to me, and I slam the car door, and guess what? I lock my keys in the car with my cell phone. This is a true story. Have you guys heard it? So then I decide, well, I'm going to have to call the tow truck guy to get my keys out of the car, but my cell phone's in the car along with my keys because I'm smart. And so I call the tow truck, and the guy shows up, and I can't move my car because I don't have my car keys. And now we got to get, he comes and he's going to give me gas because he thinks I say out of gas. I said, no, I was running out of gas and I locked my keys in the car. So the first phone call I gave you is because I was out of gas and my tire was flat, but now I'm... And the guy, when he gets out of the car, he looks like he's like three sheets to the wind. He looks kind of like he was partying with my nephew, actually. So he's all blazed-eyed. It's that time in the morning. I'm late for work. This is all happening. And somehow in my mind, I get the brilliant idea that, because the only thing I got to do is pop the car door open, but I get the idea that I can pull the nozzle into the gas can so I could pump gas into my car. I really can't believe I haven't told this story because this is freaking funny. So, huh? I have? Okay. So I'm pumping gas in my car, and I'm this close to getting the nozzle into the hole. And I know that if I can get that nozzle into the hole, then I'm going to be able to pump the gas, and, you know, I'm trying to be efficient because I've had a bad day, and I want to hurry it up. And so a tow truck driver pulls up, and he wants to now help me with the hose, so he's pulling on the hose, and I'm pulling on the hose, and sure enough, the hose rips out of the gas pump. The gas, like, shoots all over the gas station. So now I have had a flat tire, I'm out of gas, I locked my keys in the car, and now I've ripped the hose right off the side of the gas pump, you know? And I'm thinking to myself that either I'm in the middle of a Jim Carrey movie, and it really is not really a life, and I'm just faking it, but now the Iranian guy in the gas station just goes berserk and, you know, kind of saying I did it on purpose. Yeah, like I just go around ripping hose off there and he tells me that I'm going to pay for it and then tells me it's going to cost $185 to fix the hose. You know, he actually has a key he gets to push to do that. So this is really not a good day. So I'm saying that to kind of call attention to the fact that you can't be immune to bad stuff happening to you, that all of you have had things like that happen, where you've just had one of those days that are just very complicated. And it's important to recognize that at those times, what's the biggest question that comes to your mind when you're facing a time like that? Where's God? That's what comes to my mind. Why are you letting this happen to me? You know, why are you allowing this to happen? And although that's a humorous story where we're wondering where God is and why he's not helping me, there are people that are facing very, very harsh circumstances. I keep pointing to 10. I don't know why it's on my heart, but you know, just bearing through all that stuff with Troy, there were probably a time or two that you were saying, God, why are you doing this? You know, and you've heard the Christian response, well, God's just trying to teach you something. We're going to be better people after that and blah, 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 and thank you so much, and thanks for playing, come again. But there are people here who have faced divorces, and their marriages have crumbled, and they've lost jobs, and they've gone through hard times. And to me, it kind of like is not a true picture of God to say that God is up in heaven, you know, planning these foolish tests, even though I know and fully understand that when I face trials, I grow. I just don't think that's how that happens. I don't think that God is up in heaven specifically designing that trial for your demise or just so you could be a better person. You're not living a My Name is Earl episode. You know, you are truly feeling helpless at that time. And I think it's important to recognize that God cares about that's going on in your life, the struggle that you're going through. You know, God cares about your traffic ticket, Natalie, and, you know, God cares about you having to raise the kids as a single parent, Chris. God cares about all those things that we're going through. God really specifically, succinctly, deeply is moved in whatever it is that we're facing. And I think it's a better picture to not just think that God's up in heaven plotting, you know, our growth, but there's a dimension of trust and acceptance that goes with the embracing of our life that kind of realizes that where is God? God is carrying us. And as I was praying for our own situation and our family with the despondency that goes with depression and anxiety disorder and all the stuff that happens when you're in your worst mental place, and the angst, the cries that, you know, I sometimes have to go visit mental hospitals for various reasons, sometimes to pray for people, sometimes because they're keeping me for a couple of days. But I go in and I'm, you know, and you're there and you're listening to the cries of people. Has anybody ever had an experience where you've had to go into some place like that? I mean, it's haunting when you hear the cries of people and you really can't judge them because you realize that from the very core of their being, they're crying out for God. They're crying out for answers and they feel alone and abandoned. And I got this image of God kind of swirling, this person just swirling and spinning in the circumstances that they were facing. And they were feeling very much alone. In Judges chapter 6, verse 14, we are introduced to Jehovah Shalom. We are introduced to Jehovah Shalom through the character of Gideon, who is about ready to face this battle. And there are two things about this battle that are distinct and separate from any battle that is ever depicted in the Old Testament. The first thing about this battle is that these guys are being tortured at this time. The people of Israel are being picked on by bullies. And it's more kind of like a story of these guys who come in and they're using the Israelites, they're stealing their grain. So they kind of let them get some piece of stability, but you just never know when the thunder's going to come down and the hordes are going to ride in and they're going to take your stuff. Now, I'm familiar with that because I grew up in Inglewood, and I know what it's like to have to carry extra lunch money because somebody's going to want to take it from you, you know? And I remember that rueful day when, as small and alone as I was, I didn't want to give up my lunch money anymore because it was pizza day, it was Wednesday, and I felt like I'd given enough lunch money, and today, no matter what, come hell or high water, that was the day that I was going to fight and keep my lunch money. Because I was being bullied, and that's what's happening. And there are people here who feel bullied. There are people that are in this room today that feel bullied by an oppressor who lets you have some kind of quality of life, but it just, every time you try to get ahead, there's somebody there threatening you, opposing you, trying to steal it from you. And you've had enough. And so you can identify with this story, because that's kind of what Gideon's going through. He hates it, and he's kind of tolerating it, but he's now come to the point where he's like, he's going to fight. This kind of oppression, this spiritual oppression, and we have to remember that things are written in the Bible for us to identify with, but you know when the enemy is stealing from you. You know it. You know it in your soul when you're being ripped off. You know that you haven't deserved it. You know you've done the faithful thing. You've done the right thing. And now you just feel like you're being stolen from. That's one characteristic about this battle that's very different. The second characteristic about this battle that's very different is that the odds are against Gideon. A lot. And that's not unique through Bible stories. But this one is unique in the aspect that no matter how prepared Gideon is to get people that are sympathizing behind him, God keeps whittling down the army until it becomes a ridiculous number. Like, here's something that's a little ironic compared to the times that we live in. There's this movie that's coming out called 300, and that's the odds that are going on here with Gideon. He actually gets his army down to beneath 300 people. So maybe they heard it here first, you know, before you got it. Maybe this is really Gideon's story told in another way, even though I know it's a true story. But still, anyways, here you go. So it's funny that when we approach our problems, we oftentimes get to a point where we want people to help us in our problems. You know, we want people to help us. And we don't understand why they have the resources and they won't help us. Something that angered me this week was somebody I know that's in complete point of destitution, and they've been faithful with their time and their money, and they have a family member who can easily kind of bail everybody out, but he's this idealistic kind of person who gives he's a philanthropist, so he gives, I don't even know how you would say that in a verb form, but he philanthropically, how would you say that? If it's not a verb, maybe I'll create one and be like Jack Hayford or something. But anyways, he's a philanthropist, you know, and he just gives money to all these people and he gets all these awards and he likes those awards and he's out there. But when I came into the scene, I was kind of like, well, why can't you help this person out? You know, this is your family. And he responded in a very ethical way, but I could tell you where the Spirit of God wasn't in his statement. He said, well, I just believe that if I help them, they won't grow. And I said, well, have you ever helped them? And he said, well, no. And he says, it's just against my principles. You know, and I said, well, I hope your principles keep you warm at night. But what about that Bible verse that says that you must care for your own household before you go out there and do all that? What about that? And I said, I think it's wrong that you sent that person to the church for help, but you wouldn't help them. You know, you have the resources, you have the time, and you just refuse to do it. And this is a good guy as far as I know. Is he a criminal? No. Is he using you? No. Has he done it? No. He just says, well, I just... You know, I don't know. So I have the church. Let me say in this in a weird thing. Like, if you wanted to give money to benevolence, you can and use that as a tax deduction. This is the only time in my history that I ever tell somebody that they could not give me money that I could give to somebody else in benevolence. The first time I said, you give them that money because I believe that it needs to cost you something. So you're not going to do it because the church is giving you a tax shelter. You need to help your family member. You know, you need to help them out. And it was a weird day because I don't even know why I did what I did. All of a sudden, I felt like this champion of justice, you know, rising to the occasion. And I had not slept for 3 days. I was a little pissed off. And that's always a good day to tangle me because, I think I've been in this mood for like about 2 weeks. I've just been in a butt-kicking mood. I don't know why I can't get out of it, but I'm there. So anyway, so you can identify with it. And in the midst of all of this, God shows up to Gideon, who's kind of panicking because he doesn't have the army, he doesn't have the resources, he doesn't have anybody to help him, and he's overwhelmed, and he's got to deal with these bullies. And God says, peace be with you, do not fear, you shall not die. Now that's always encouraging words to hear from the Lord, you know, because you probably are fearful of that, you know. Can you imagine the Lord showing up at one of your trials, like you're complaining about your utility bill, and God says, hey, listen, peace be with you, you shall not die. And you're like, what was that? Where'd that come in? And it reminds me about God being, what he was trying to share with Gideon was that he was in control. And what he's always trying to teach us is that he is in control and there's a way that he does things that's unlike the way that we would do things. And there's a constant relationship with God that always keeps us in some kind of interdependence with him, to where he is the one who is saving us. He is the one who is delivering us. He's the one who's providing us miracles. And it's the job of the Christian to place this trust in God that kind of flies in the face of common sense, circumstances, resources. You know, there's this trust. This is all that God is asking out of you, is to trust him in that situation, that he is not leaving you abandoned. The thing that captures me about my own family situation and that spiraling is that I really believe that as the camera pans back, that God's hand is undergirding that situation and holding the whole thing in the hollow of his hand. The word says that he will not forsake us or forget us because he has carved us in the hollow of his hand. Friend, where is God in the situation that you're facing? I believe that he is engaged. You can show God is there because his presence is all over whatever it is that you're facing. He is comforting you and he is helping you. In Matthew chapter 8, verses 24 through 27, we have this picture of Jesus who is This is a strange story, although it's a very warming story. It's also a very strange story because it kind of speaks about that apparent apathy of God that we all hate. There's that story that said that God is never late, but he's missed some tremendous opportunities to be early. And in this situation, we have a storm that has come up upon the apostles, and Jesus, for whatever reason, is asleep in the boat. Now, you have to realize that it's not just Jesus being neglectful. He's had a hard time, and he's trying to get away from the crowds, and he's been spinning by all the conflicts that have happened to him recently. And he decides that he's going to sit out into the ocean, and I know what that feels like because, you know, I know what it's like to be away from people. It's hard to disconnect from people, and when you're out there in the middle of the ocean, it's hard for people to get to you. And so Jesus is out there, and he is resting. His body is tired. He is suffering under the duress of being human, you know. And he's asleep in the middle of the storm. And every story and every commentary I ever read was there was Jesus bundled up and in the boat. And I'm thinking, well, this was no cruise ship. You ever seen a picture of these boats? This kind of a boat was a lot like a big canoe. And so I can envision that Jesus wasn't all that snuggy buggy like a bug in a rug. I mean, I'm assuming that the rain was coming and the winds were blowing and he was as affected by it. He was just out. And have you ever been in that situation where you've just about had all you can handle and you need a break and then one more crisis comes in, you know? This is a humorous tale. It goes back to the 80s when I didn't want to be in ministry, and I lived on Royal Avenue, and Sue and I had had a romantic night, you know. And at that time, my hair, so it was actually something she was looking forward to. I was smooth. And Barry White was playing on the radio, and, you know, and the kids were gone, and candles out. Everything was just, you know, it was just moving to the grooving, you know, everything was just happening. And in the midst of, you know, I only have two moves, and one of them's good, the other one's not, it's kind of so-so. But in the midst of my great, you know, swoon, the doorbell rings, and it's my friend Rocco, who is just split up with his wife, you know. And he is pounding on the door saying, "You got to open up, man. I need somebody to talk to." And I'm like, you know, I'm wearing like, you know, red heart kinds of things, and it's really not a pretty sight. You know, so, looking like Valentino with a rose, you know, it's kind of hard. And I'm thinking, "Corey, come back to Lyle. The wizard's not home, you know." I'm doing the shh, if we stay here long enough. He's like, "I know you guys are in here, man. You got to open up. It's really bad. It's really, really, really bad, you know." And I'm like, "No, the mechanics, they move. No aquí. There's no casa. No next door." But he's persistent, and he wants to talk, you know. So, you know, I do, "Hey, you hold that move, baby. I'll be right back," you know. So I kind of try to, Rocco needed to come in and talk, you know, and it was horrible. The situation was just not good. And I can identify with what Jesus is going through in this situation. You know, it's kind of like, I look at this like this is probably the last thing. I mean, Jesus' response is bold and it's empowered, but it also, the story itself rings of, what now? You know? And here are these disciples that he has led. He has had these power encounters. He had sent them out two by two. They know the power of God, but they're in this situation where they let fret come in and they get a panic attack. And then their statement to Jesus is, "Lord, save us. We're going to drown." And Jesus' response is kind of a rebuke. What is he says, "Ye of little faith." And there are several parables that are kind of a little kind of tricky in this context. But in some aspects, when we talk about the sower and the seed, we realize that the emphasis really is not on the sower or the seed, it's on the soil, the condition of the heart. And so Jesus' indictment here about "you of little faith" means that they at least had some common sense to look to him to the answer, but they could not just rest in the turmoil. They panicked, and Jesus was actually rebuking them because they let this get to them. Does that make sense? You been there? Where you almost, you know in your heart that you probably should have more trust, but you're not, you're panicking. And so Jesus says, "Ye of little faith, why are you afraid?" Now, I'm sarcastic. And if Jesus had said that to me, most of you know that I have very little discernment. And I will say anything to anybody at any time, and thereby what probably removes me from being somewhere near the President of the United States, but I can't help it. I mean, it just comes to my mind, and my mind works. My mind works a little weird. Just recently, I had to serve this traditional Southern pastor who was teaching people about how to do illustrated sermons, and he was the kind of guy who, like, you know, fries bacon or steak in a sermon, and you know, gives you a visual about what's happening, and that's good. It's just that that's not me. I can't do that. I've tried to be creative, and it hasn't happened. So the guy was saying, every one of you must do illustrated sermons. It's the only way to get people to pay attention. And I said, well, I'm just not into that during a break. And he said, well, you know, have you ever tried it? And I'm like, well, yeah, but that pray naked thing did not go over near as well in the church as it, I thought it would. And then I said, the funny one that got to him that he didn't laugh at, he actually got mad. But I said, and he goes, well, you can't just judge everything by one time. I go, well, no, there was also this time I was doing this sermon on the difference between drinking and drunkenness, and that didn't go over real well either. And the parole officer says, I can't do that for a couple of years. And he goes, you always this flippant? And I said, you always that stoic? So we got myself in trouble one more time. But if Jesus had said this to me, you know, why are you so afraid? I think that my inner sarcasm would have kicked in. Well, let's see. There's like 12 of us in this flipping little boat here, and there's storms and waves coming, and you're kind of like sleeping, you know, on the ground, and yeah, I'm a little afraid here. I'm on fire like Ricky Bobby. And so Jesus gets up, and he rebukes the winds and the waves. Now, this is an interesting passage because everybody's preached on this, and they always preach on how, you know, Jesus calmed the storm and he can calm the storms of your life. But what's very interesting is the fact that it's noted for us to read, not just so we could be overwhelmed by these miracles that Jesus keeps doing. I think we all get the point that Jesus is a miracle worker and he's a person that works in power. But we oftentimes miss the subtlety because we don't understand why it is that those stories exist in the Bible. They're there for more than just Sunday school lessons and felt boards. They're there to remind us the power that's available to us who believe. Because Jesus is not the static image of some cartoon superhero that we made up and some legend. Jesus is an active dynamism in all of our lives, and the power that he exerted, I think what he's trying to show here is that they probably could have done the same thing. So the picture here is that Jesus reached back to that moving throne of God that you've heard me talk about. He's moved, he has touched the very power of heaven, the creator of the ends of the earth. He has reached back and he has touched the power of God, and he has brought it into a real world situation. That his vision of the kingdom of God, the peace of God, the way that people are to live was such a powerful vision for who we are and what we can do, that he was trying to say, even this would be subject to you if you would believe. Your situation, your life is not out of control. And I share that because I think for me, it says it became completely calm. The storms, the winds, the raging waves, the terror that came by night was completely calm. And I say this because I think that Christians, from my New Age experience, they see Jesus in these New Age kind of existentialistic terms, that God is high and above and far and removed and anything but involved and engaged in our life. And I think we keep thinking that, as we'll go to the next slide there, that we're subject to fate. And I'm against that. I'm against that because I don't think that that's true. I think that we live in a fallen world, and I think that stuff happens, and I think it's overwhelming. But I think that the Christian has power for life. And I think that when a Christian begins to vision and have dreams about what their life could be, and they're facing these circumstances, if there's a way that the Christian should act, that kind of exemplifies the trust that he has in God, and maybe the Christian could touch something by the Spirit and see the power of God move in a situation that seems tragic. I have seen situations change simply because I have rooted myself in the Lord. You guys heard that story that says that if you can hold your wits about you when everyone else around you is losing theirs. I love this following line. It obviously means you don't know what's going on. But there is a time where you can command. You ever lost your mind in that situation? You ever lost your mind? I mean, I'm just going to admit, there are times where I feel like I've lost it. I panicked over what's going on. What are we going to do? I don't know. What are we going to do? I get in those situations where I'm like, I'm not even talking or thinking or acting out of a context that would even resemble from an outside person that I know the Lord. Does that make sense? I mean, I really feel like I need my friend to come and put out my invisible fire, you know? Slap me around a little bit and say, hey, you're not on fire, Ricky Bobby. You know? Take stock of your life. And realize that you're not as powerless as maybe you feel that you are. You are not subjects to fate. You're not just dependent on the next car tire or the next bill that comes in. You have some control. You have some say. You know, you have a challenge to not lose it in the face of everything that's happening around you. I think you have to remind yourself that God's in the boat with you. And that God is in control. And that even this, he can take care of. Whatever he has done, I believe that he could do it again. You're not subject to your own devices. And what in a very 3 o'clock in the morning-ish kind of a way, it doesn't seem like it reads the way I wanted it to say, but all I meant was, there are people here who, I meet people all the time that think that they're the reason that their life is so screwed up. You know, that I'm just an idiot. Maybe you are, I don't know. But they think that's the reason that everything's happened. I'm just a loser. You know, I'm just that way. You know, how crude can I get today? Is Glenn out there? All right. Okay, well, I'm going to say it anyways. Sylvia, I'm sorry. This is going to be one of those messages you can't get to Michelle. I have people that think that they're shit magnets. That, you know, crap just gravitates to them. You ever feel that way? Why are you laughing? Did you just say that? Is that bad to say? Can I say it that way? How many people here are poop magnets? Just like crap just comes your way. You could be standing in a perfect calm and crap just comes. Right outside your bedroom window. Why is this happening to me? And you know, sometimes I don't think that that's true. I don't think that's always true. I think you're as blindsided by the stuff that's happening to you. I think that there's people here that are just doing the best they can with what they have. I think they're just doing the best they can. I think they get up in the morning and they run out of gas and their car tires deflate and they rip nozzles out of gas pumps and you're just doing what you can do with what you got to do it with. And there's nothing wrong with that, friends. God is not absent from you. I mean, you realize that we're not born under a sign, you know, where God is ever present, sustaining you, helping you in the situation that you are facing. We're not subject to our own design or devices, shortcomings. Thank God that I don't get what's coming to me. Thank God. That's the power of grace. Thank God I don't get what I deserve. Thank God that I'm not in trouble for being who I am before God. Thank God that I am enough because He is enough. And I can be myself in God's presence. I can quit kicking the crap out of myself. And I can trust in God and I can hope in God. And I can realize that He's making the situation better. We're not alone in the trials that we face. And that's a big word down there in the bottom. We're under providence. Because that word is really misunderstood. When other people hear the word providence, they think that God is up in heaven kind of designing everything and that we're just kind of just subject, you know. One guy on George Bush on the radio, he says, so why do you think this happened? And he went, well, it's just their time. It's just their time. Just their time, you know. as though, you know, everybody's on lotto and tornado was just scheduled to come here and they should have known that. You know, just, you know, and I don't think that's true. I think that there's something more to it. You know, I think that the choices that we can make that bring us into a place of goodness and wholeness. And when I say providence, I mean that God sustains us. You know, I am crazy enough to believe that every paycheck and every dollar that I get, I feel in my spirit that I can follow that line back and it comes from God. Does that make sense? I believe that every tax check I get, I believe that every birthday card with has any kind of money in it, any goodwill that comes to me, there is not a time that somebody gives me something that I don't lift it up before God and say, God, I thank you, as little as this may be, I thank you for taking care of me. Does that make sense? And I believe that that's what I mean by providence. The Lord is my sustainer. I know how to make prudent, wise, stewarded choices. And I'm not giving up. I'm going to keep on keeping on. But I am fully, firmly convinced that every person that comes into my life that's a point of blessing has been sent by God. And I've seen people that don't think that. I think I've heard people say, well, I'm just going to get this for a right now job. And, you know, it leads back to the Lord. The Lord will take care of you. When you guys get there, God's got a job for you, you know. He's got something for you, right? He's going to help you. He's going to help you. And you know, he's going to be there. You don't ever have to doubt and say, why are we here? We've made a mistake. We've gone left on God and right on God. Do you know? I have a sneaking suspicion that, you know, God is present in Mississippi, you know. Just depends on what part of town. But God is in Simi Valley. You know, I'm so sick of hearing people tell me that Simi Valley is this big wasteland and nobody can ever do anything good, and nobody can ever do anything great. I'm like, I don't really care what you think. This is my zip code. Does that make sense? It's where I live. This is what I do. This is where I'm at. No matter where I go, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to let words of discouragement, I'm not going to let my own stupidity, I'm not going to let the circumstances come dictate who I am in God. I am not going to let my disappointments dictate my actions. I'm going to change this time. I'm going to be better this time. I'm going to trust God in what I am facing. I am going to trust His sovereignty. I'm going to realize that He is in control. I recognize that He is providing for me. And I'm just not going to let it get me down. Does that make sense? That's what some of you need today. You're just not going to let... So you got bill collectors after you, and you don't know how you're going to get a child support. You don't know how this is going to happen. I don't know, and I don't care, but I will tell you that there's life after it. I've been through it. I know that there is a time where that isn't going to be the case. And God is going to show Himself to be strong in your life. And you're going to be better for it, not because of the trial that you're going through, but because you have developed this interdependence and trust in God. Anything can come at you. And let me tell you, friend, it's going to make you a lot less in control of your wallet, a lot less in control of your circumstances. You're just going to say, I don't know, but God's going to take care of it. Does that make sense? I have seen miracles come. I point to Dave King, and he knows that I'm saying this, because Dave struggled with depression every day for a year. Years, probably 2 years. And there was various opinions about what the guy should do about it. He couldn't work because when he worked, he was a criminal. I mean, I hate to say it, but he was one of those sales guys that would sell accessories, and so he'd convince you to buy what you didn't need to buy, you know. So like he'd had good tires, but he'd sell you new tires. Then he'd take those tires and he'd sell them over here. And, you know, he felt that it was dishonest work and that he didn't want to do that anymore. But he didn't know how to do anything else. And if you knew Dave, you knew that he didn't know how to do anything else. We opened up a Christmas tree lot to get, you know, with Sue helping, and Sue basically ran the lot because he just really was not an organized person, you know. But he believed in his heart that God was going to use him, and he wanted his life to change, and everybody around him thought it was the most ridiculous concept. Boy, you just need to go do whatever and be whatever, and that's not going to work for you, and how is God ever going to use you? And his whole family got negative on him. Well, you know what? He's serving God today as a full-time missionary. And God's taking care of him, and he's trusting God, and he's doing good. He's driving a truck, which somehow fits Dave. I don't know how. If you knew Dave any length of time, he's gotten everything from, what was he going to, like, Pearl, huh? He wanted to open a barbecue house, underwater fishing. He was going to weld under some pier or something for a while. And I got a lot of crazy friends like this. I mean, Mark Eric don't even let me go down that story. That was just, you need therapy after that. But it's funny how God seems to be around people who you wouldn't think that he would be around, you know? You would think that he would not be present with those people because they're kind of odd, you know? But God is. God's surrounding them, and they have this sense of providence to them where God's going to take care of needs. I believe that there are people here that are in complete angst about the things that you're facing, and I believe that there is a call, a challenge today, for you to place yourself in a trust kind of relationship with God where you will not betray your faith. You will not betray your heart towards God, that you will have confidence in this very thing, that God, who has begun a good work in you, will perfect it until the day of redemption. And I believe that as you let go and as you proclaim that trust in God, that the shalom of God, the wholeness of God, the completeness of God will come around you. He'll overtake you, and he'll bring you into a place of just irrevocable confidence in what God is doing. Trust God, because God is the God of peace. That's all I got to say.